On this edition of FedGov Today with Francis Rose, the partnership equation to build a 10-year tech plan and collaboration solutions that work across agencies. It's Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Welcome to FedGov Today with Francis Rose. The White House says its Better Contracting Initiative will save more than $10 billion a year. It includes four prongs to achieve that goal. Christine Harada, Special Advisor in the Office of Federal Procurement Policy at OMB, will tell you about the Better Contracting Initiative on FedGov Today TV, Sunday morning at 10:30 on ABC7 in Washington and on the FedGov Today YouTube channel. If you missed the show Sunday morning, it's always available on demand at fedgovtoday.com. The Department of Energy says it's planning for technology that might not exist for 10 years or more. Given the leaps in tech in the past 10 years, leaders say that planning requires great flexibility. Brian Epley is Deputy Chief Information Officer at Energy. At the ACT-IAC Climate Change Summit, he tells me about the partnerships he wants to help maximize that flexibility.
We're focusing on both government and industry. So those are at the macro level. But I think that what I'm trying to highlight is that our partnerships take on more than just the one-to-one type relationship. There are all kinds of partnerships through that journey. But also, I think what we look at is, in my organization, Department of Energy, how do we partner with our labs? Our labs are national treasures. And our other partners are also working with them directly. So it's a myriad, a very dynamic partnership, if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. It does. And that's the reason I asked it, is understanding the different nature that you have with the labs, who are kind of independent entities, but also very locked in to the department's infrastructure and the data exchange and the security posture and all of those things. It's maybe not unique in the federal government, but it's certainly different than I think a lot of agencies experience. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And if I may, I think three other key topics that I've raised in today's sessions highlighted technology, innovation, and security. And I think one that was missing is data. Mm. And I would look for partners across each of those. And we need to come together in more of a fusion team dynamic. It's not just a point in time. It's not a linear journey. We're going to make changes, divert, course correct. And I think that it's important that we bake those things in as we go. When I say those things, we need to be cognizant of the data elements downstream. We need to bake in security today. We can create innovation, but it requires rework if we don't do these things at the infancy on the onset.
That fusion team dynamic concept, that's a really good name to hang on to that, I think. What does that look like in its healthiest, most mature state, do you think?
So I think what's key for me when I think of a fusion team is it starts with the mission. It starts with the business. It starts with that core objective. What are we trying to accomplish? What are the outcomes that are going to recognize that success? The fusion team starts there, but it's going to mold and take on other partnerships, and it really forces that collaboration. The fusion team is key because it's taking on different shapes and forms as it evolves. And the dynamic of a fusion team is going to keep itself in check so that it's on course to achieve those outcomes that we set forth with.
How have you seen a team like that work effectively to achieve whatever it is, the outcome that the leadership determines that team should bring to the table?
I've seen that in many cases. Personally, I'm happy here to represent the Department of Energy at the summit, but my previous life, I was the deputy CIO with the Environmental Protection Agency. And I have, I think, two key examples in both of those environments where we developed fusion teams that were mission and business focused and then used technology as a catalyst to achieve those outcomes as true partners. And I hear what you're saying. Let's parrot this back and verify that I understand that. And that enabled us to actually bake in some of the requirements that we needed to ensure success. And when I say requirements, it's not just regulation, right? But I think I would highlight that my other experience is not just government. It really highlights the industry and the collaboration and partnership that's required there. And we currently use partnerships that are on contract with us, but we're also expanding relationships and partnerships that are with and outside of the labs. Today, we heard from the National Science Foundation. We're looking at Bill and IRA funding that's really helping support the innovation. And many of our partners in that space, like NSF, don't have the same types of lines of funding. So we have to figure out creatively how we can uncover and solve other problems.
You said something there that I think is profound but simple and often missed, and that is repeating back, this is what you. I think you said, did I get it right in delivering on requirements? That doesn't happen nearly as often as it should, I imagine.
I smile because you're absolutely right. My experience has not shown that to be common enough. Yeah. But I think another example that recently, we didn't call it a fusion team, but recently we partnered, Department of Energy partnered with Treasury, IRS, the Office of Manufacturing, Energy Supply Chain, and a number of others, focusing on a couple of projects that your audience is probably familiar with, 48C, 48E. Mm-hmm. And what we did is we kind of created that fusion team concept because we needed to move fast. We had hard deadlines based on commitments, not only of the dollars, but what our constituents and the American people really depended upon. And our manufacturer partners required it so that they could actually advance on that mission. And then our taxpayers required it so that they could actually get tax credits. And we were able to meet extreme tight timelines that would not have been possible without the partnership and other agencies and without that fusion team concept.
I want to shift gears in the time that we have left, Brian, because I know you're really an important part of Ann Duncan's digital modernization efforts at the Energy Department. Where does that stand and what are the key prime things that you and Ann are working on right now in that transformation effort?
Sure. That's a great question. So what Ann and I did is we developed the Office of the CIO strategic plan. So that's a 2024-2028 plan. It's not your traditional strategic plan, meaning it's not shelfware. The concept here is really just trying to provide a framework. And then I think what really makes a difference is the operating plan that I implemented with our team that looks at it annualized. It's an FY, a fiscal year commitment. What are our priorities? What must we accomplish? And how can we realistically do these things? Knowing what our dependencies are, what our partnerships are, funding streams or limitations. And that is enabling us. We've already seen results, but that's enabled us to really deliver on our mission as well as our partners' missions across the department and outside of the Department of Energy.
What you're talking about there resonates with me because I just went through the process of working on 2025 for, so this personal development guy that I follow that doesn't have anything to do with the federal government or IT or any of that jazz talks about a 3-year plan. You use 4, but that's fine. It's similar. And then his advice is, so then figure out where you need to be in a year to hit that 3-year mark, and then figure out where you need to be in 6 months to hit the year, and so on, down to here's what you should do today to set yourself up for success at the end of the week. And it sounds like that's the same concept that you and Ann are using.
It is, and it's a proven concept that works. Yeah. So we're not just looking at it through a technology lens saying, hey, I'm at revision 1 and I need to get to, you know, rev 3 in 3 years. We're also trying to drive, we're not trying, we are, we're driving transformative outcomes. So it's not just technology. We're delivering value to our partners and our stakeholders in our department, but also aligned to our mission. So what I mean by that is as you move into the technology landscape, we're a leader in the AI space, for example. We developed our own responsible use guideline or reference guide that the entire department can use. Rev 1 is available for public consumption. We're working on Rev 2. These are examples of where we're actually moving the dial and making a difference.
Ann was on the TV show, I want to say January, February, something like that. If I got the date wrong, I apologize, but that's in the archives at fedgovtoday.com. She talked on that show about how she's working with her office, your team, about making sure they don't get caught up in the AI frenzy and start just not thinking about use cases and mission and just AI for AI's sake. How are you spreading that throughout the department to folks who aren't necessarily technology people, who hear about this great new thing, I'm using air quotes around new, for AI, and think they're just going to sprinkle some AI dust on it and everything will be wonderful? How do you keep people out of that buzzword mentality, I guess?
I think it's very common, but what's unique at the Department of Energy is that we've been doing AI and ML for decades. Mm-hmm. So we've got that challenge, but it's different. It's trying to keep up. So what we did, Ann and I, we championed a tiger team that was across the entire department. And that allowed us to bring subject matter experts in AI and ML together and identify how these hundreds of use cases we're going to apply and how we're going to prioritize these things so that we could bring that to scale, not just for the department, but actually make that ready and available for the rest of FedCiv or even the American people.
So the measuring the success on the broader strategy that we talked about earlier is pretty obvious if because you're doing those kind of slicing the cheese along the way, and you know if you get to this point, if you've reached that point, you have plenty of measures. How do you do that with artificial intelligence when it's maybe a little bit more amorphous, not as defined and not as mature?
So I think it comes down to the fundamentals of just programmatics. What are those outcomes? And then how do we have key performance indicators that we're actually moving in that direction? Are we accomplishing the specific measures that we set forth? And then having the ability to actually course correct. The strategic plan is the framework, but the operating plan is how we actually tactically and operationalize that. That's how we make it real. It's not a secret sauce. It's just the fundamental programmatics. There's a lot of accountability in that because we need to ensure not just outcomes, but that we're not spinning wheels. Mm-hmm. And we can easily come off track. And we've had to bring that back in to ensure that we're staying aligned to our outcomes, the focused objectives.
Mm-hmm. I understand the concept of KPIs, but is it possible for someone, not necessarily energy, to develop those for something that, and I know you said you've been doing AI and ML for years. How do you develop those for something that is so fluid as artificial intelligence is today? I imagine the KPIs would change on an ongoing basis, the way that desired outcomes would change, the technology would change, and so on.
Sure. So what I was referring to is just the programmatics in terms of managing execution. Upstream, what you're talking to, I think, is the planning aspect of that. So what we do is we validate, how does this align to the strategic goals that we set forth? How does this really deliver on the mission across the department? And as you know, the Department of Energy has a very vast mission, multiple missions. So we have to ask those questions of ourselves. And is it producing the results that we need? And that enables the prioritization to say, this is a green light. This one we're going to, it's not a no, but it's a not now. So there's a sequencing to those prioritizations, if that makes sense.
Brian Epley of the Energy Department. You can read more about what he's doing at Energy in today's show notes at fedgovtoday.com. I'm Francis Rose, the host of FedGov Today. One of the key cyber relationships in the federal government is between the Office of the Federal Chief Information Officer and the Office of the National Cyber Director. The holders of those offices, Claire Martirana and Harry Coker, are my guests for the next FedGov Today podcast next Wednesday. They'll tell you about their partnerships, how they work on cyber issues with civilian agencies, and how they collaborate with defense and intel agencies. You can find that podcast anywhere you get your shows and always on demand at fedgovtoday.com. Agency priority goals in the president's management agenda include several goals that cut across multiple agencies. Former government leaders say agencies still struggle with cross-agency collaboration. Mark Osler is senior advisor for coastal inundation and resilience at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. His portfolio includes a lot of cross-agency collaboration. He tells me what he's seen that works and what doesn't work between agencies.
I do spend time in the interagency space where different parts of the executive branch are trying to define shared goals and then shared execution plans against those. One of the early dividers, in my view, is whether that desire for alignment and shared execution is bottom up or top down. The ones that I have seen be most fruitful have a significant component of bottom up support. It could have generated there, or it could be fomenting there and need an executive presence to kind of spark the fire. But things that are pure top-down are usually falling on ground that's not ready to germinate that seed of an idea. So that's a key component to me. There is often in the successful pieces I've seen, there is acknowledgement of complementarity. The phrase that comes up a lot in my world is a value chain, mm-hmm. thinking that there, and I think in terms of like a sandbag brigade, that there's folks at the front of the line that are filling the bags, there are folks in the middle that pass it from one stage to the next, and there are folks with expertise on placement and delivery. those concepts can be really valuable to allow people to speak to one another with respect and acknowledgement of a contribution, but to avoid the pitfall of each partner, program, or agency claiming the entirety of the space for themselves. And that allows me to cheer for you while also feeling I respect the ground that I stand on, and I understand my mission and how I play in that space. I'll tell you a key thing I listen for when folks are talking about collaboration. I found the government's pretty earnest and relatively successful at communicating what I'm doing, my stuff, and I'm happy to share that with you. Now I'm going to listen to you, and you're going to tell me the stuff you're doing. And what I see a lot of are people aligning to say, oh, well, those sound similar. Let's stay in touch so we can be aware of one another in case there's a moment where we can help each other out. That, to me, falls short of true collaboration. And so what I listen for, one of the key hallmarks for true collaboration in my ears, is I want you to tell me something that is critical to your mission delivery, and then tell me that you are not doing it because you have a trusted partner that you are relying on their expertise to deliver that, which transcends just the basic awareness, but now you both have skin in the game for that outcome. And when you can align for moments like that and have shared respect, those are some of the ingredients that are present in the most successful collaborations I've been next to.
I imagine from an existential perspective, that's really difficult though, because that requires somebody to become aware of a need that they have and be willing to rely on somebody else to deliver it instead of want to control the way that they deliver that or receive that service, whatever, on their own. Am I on the right track there?
I think unavoidably. And so the space where you get into the matching the edges between those is how central that thing that really matters to you, how central is that to your mission? And I think I'm thinking of an archery target where it says 10, the smallest circle in the middle says 10 and then 9. If you're talking about a thing that is a 10, 9 or 8 to your mission, that's probably not something that you comfortably can share or even legally would be encouraged to share. But once you get out to the 4, 5, 6, where it's not actually the core of what you do, but it's a core enabler of what you do and you rely on it somewhere in that value chain, those are the places that I would encourage folks to look and to engender the trust, which you mentioned absolutely has to be present. Sharing money, sharing mandate can be helpful. Having executive expectation, cultural expectation. I have seen that vary greatly across agencies and programs within agencies. Some places where you get brownie points from your leadership by solving a problem in collaboration with others. There are other cultures where that's actually a demerit.
Mm-hmm.
That may suggest that we cannot do everything ourselves. I don't like that narrative. I prefer a narrative where we, as our program or agency, is a be-all or end-all. And so there can quite often be cultural barriers to that. But it starts with an individual finds a like-minded individual with a vision high enough up the org chart to actually impact, and then you're off and running.
I like your target analogy, and thinking about it in the way that you described it, 8, 9, 10, you definitely want to do yourself, maybe 7, 6, 5, and 4, and so on. You want to think about letting somebody else do that. What that implies to me is that 3, 2, and 1, you shouldn't touch it because that's not your core capability or your core mission. It might support that mission, but that's not something that you want to do yourself. You want to do what you're good at and let other people do what they're good at, other organizations do what they're good at.
Yeah, I agree entirely with that conclusion from that analogy. There are some challenges even to that. It requires some organizational introspection, which there's not always time to do and may not be part of the culture you work in, but it's a valuable piece. Well, how do we rank this from 10 to 1 if we continue this analogy? And how do we decide what 1, 2, or 3 is? The other piece is an organization is likely under pressure on the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 because it is a current priority for the administration or the lawmakers, there is an unavoidable, tantalizing invitation to enunciate that your expertise could extend to and include 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, rather than staying put and being comfortable in the excellence right at the center of the target. And so that's a piece that is unique as well, that exists, I think, in the federal government and outside in the private sector. And so there's a degree of organizational humility that is involved with successful collaboration in that regard.
You've used various forms of the word align throughout the course of this conversation, reducing barriers to alignment, people aligning on mission. How important is it, and how does one successfully go about making sure that everybody's idea of alignment is the same? It's one thing to say this is our mission and we're going to call on our friends from another organization to help us do it. But I imagine alignment is not just aligning on mission, but the way one goes about accomplishing whatever that's going to be.
Absolutely. To borrow a phrase from the private sector, we got scope, schedule, and budget. And those need to be understood and understood in the same way. Add into that in the federal government, you have your authorizations and your appropriations, which get at some of those items. So there is absolutely an important executive leadership role in continuing communication cadence and setting expectations for the collaborative team that you're trying to lead, so that folks are not spending time asking and requiring repeated clarification on those things together. So it's alignment on outcomes, but it's also alignment on tempo, alignment on resources, alignment on methods. I also find critical in the federal government, more so than in my experience in the private sector, alignment up front on the narrative when we succeed. Let's only enter this if you and I agree we can succeed with it. And then let's plan to succeed from day one that we will accomplish this. Mm-hmm. That can often benefit from time being spent before the pressure of the delivery moment, where you and I are still in a honeymoon phase and we're dreaming about the wonderful future we're going to create. Let's talk openly and with trust for one another about what's most important on the delivery, on the message, mm-hmm. and when we succeed, how do we talk about that? That's a key piece of that alignment as well.
Mark Osler of NOAA. You can read more in today's show notes at fedgovtoday.com. I'm Francis Rose. I'll see you on FedGov Today TV this Sunday morning at 10:30 on ABC7 in Washington and on our YouTube channel with Christine Harada from OFPP. She'll tell you about the Better Contracting Initiative. I know you're really busy and you might not catch all the podcasts and TV shows FedGov Today offers you. If you want to keep up with everything that we're putting out, you can follow us on LinkedIn to get the latest updates. You'll get the next FedGov Today podcast next Wednesday with Claire Martirana, the federal CIO, and Harry Coker, the National Cyber Director. Until then, thanks very much for listening.